Good morning, Joni. Yeah, the time, the season is definitely not gardening season today, but.
So we have Mardell here for the garden conversation, along with Donna Cattotti, lovely gardens that Donna has.
Yes. So how this came to be was is that I realized that we have not had a lot of the gardeners that have been gardening for years and years here. And so the logical first person I went to was one of the persons who mentored me when I came to Haines 25 years ago or however long ago it was, and I started gardening, and I needed to ask people questions. How do you do this here? What's going on? And so Donna Cattotti was one of those. The other person was Nancy Soggy. So it was mostly Donna and Nancy. And where I probably learned the most was when I worked in your garden, Donna. I worked in your garden for a couple summers.
Yeah, you weeded my gravel trails. I am still trying to pay people to weed my gravel trails, or else just do it myself, because you can't have a gravel trail if you let it get green.
It's true. And I did. I learned a lot of valuable things by just watching and seeing, oh, she's doing this, and I like this. And that's the nice thing about going into people's gardens. You can say, oh, I like this, or I don't like this. I wouldn't do it like this. And so so how many years have you been gardening here?
31.
31 years. So, Okay, we got 31 years of gardening knowledge in one
here.
Person.
I gardened
here,
elsewhere before.
And you gardened
that,
elsewhere, which is valuable when you can take information from elsewhere and you know, as you have found out, here is a little bit different. And it's changing as well. Right now, I'm guessing that you're doing a few different practices now than you were 31 years ago?
I'm trying to streamline it a little bit more. Mm-hmm. You know, one thing that I have learned is in my youth of 37, 38 years old, I built way too big of a garden. So now I have to take care of it. And so, I'm trying to streamline things a little bit if I find a way to do something more efficiently or with less time. And in terms of some of the flower beds, it's like, okay, I'm done with that one. The brambles can have it back, because there's a certain point where you just can't deal with it at all.
Mm-hmm. And that was one of the things that I learned in working in your, one of the things I remember you saying is only build what you're willing to work, because...
And when you're 38, you don't know what it's going to be
true.
When you're 68.
So. Yeah, it's true. So how have you streamlined, besides just letting some beds go? Are there other things that you've
done? I really just let flower beds go. I haven't really let my vegetable beds go, except I finally did a green manure on one of them this year. So that'll be an interesting experiment to see how the soil is next spring.
Mm-hmm.
But what do I do to streamline?
How did you do that?
I did
it at the fall, or did you
I spring planted something that it was some kind of oats and clover and peas and whatever, and it got to be this great big tall stuff, and before it made seeds I just turned it under real quick and letting it rot, and then by spring that soil should have all that nutrition of that greenery in it.
So last year that bed was fallow.
Yeah, this last spring.
Okay.
I planted one of my beds
into a green
garden, which I've always meant to do, but I never wanted to give up the space.
Yeah, that's right. That's the hard thing to do, is to give up some space.
And there's a few other, you know, trying to, like, seeding the carrots and weeding them later, as opposed to poking every little hole. For years, I did the French intensive method, where everything is planted on a grid. It's planted close together. It's I'm methodical that way, and you know, want all the spaces just the right amount apart and all that kind of stuff. So I spent more time fussing over it, I think, than I needed to.
Mm-hmm.
So I try not to do quite as much of that. A couple other things, and this is one I wanted to remember to share, was with my potatoes. So one year we were traveling much of the summer, and I had people looking after my garden, and I thought, well, I should mulch these potato beds so they don't have to water as often. They won't dry out as quickly. It was one of those hot summers.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had two beds right next to each other full of potatoes, and I got around to putting a 12-inch mulch of seaweed on one of them and not on the other one. And when it came time to dig them up, first of all, there was lots of earthworms at the contact zone between the seaweed and the soil, so that's a good thing.
They love that.
And they both got watered the same amount. The potatoes were twice as big in the seaweed bed.
Oh, interesting.
And it never had to be weeded. So what I do is I put my potatoes in about 6 or 12 inches deep, however far as convenient. After I've prepared the bed, I put the seed potatoes in, or the pieces, and I put the 12 inches.
You bury the potatoes about 6 inches below the soil.
Yeah.
Okay. Yep.
And then I put 12 inches of seaweed on top of it, which is a bit of seaweed to collect. But that said, you never once have to pull weeds in that bed because they don't come up through the seaweed. However, the potatoes come up through the seaweed, no problem. If you wait till the potatoes are up, it's a little bit harder to put the seaweed around those potato plants without snapping them off. But if you put it on right at the start, they just come right up through it. And then when you dig your potatoes, you're automatically turning that seaweed in.
And it's already started to decompose a bit.
Yeah, you know, and some people put seaweed on and then turn it in, and then it's just like another chore. But if it's part of your process of growing potatoes, then, if it's turning in when you're digging them up, it's not an extra chore.
And, you know, that reminds me of a question that one of the questions, I think it was actually Nancy Soggy that I called 25 years ago and asked this question, or maybe it was you. I got here and everybody said, oh, I'm going to use seaweed. That's what you put in your garden beds. And it was very confusing to me of how that works. And somebody had to say to me, well, you know, seaweed doesn't really give the nutrition right away. It does bring the worms. That's a great part of seaweed. But the seaweed has to decompose into your beds. And so you put it on, and it's really the next year that you're going to get most of the benefit of the nutrition of that seaweed being worked into your beds. But that works great as a mulch.
Yeah, and that makes sense. And then any plants like the cabbages that you're planting 18 inches apart, I wait till the plants get up, but I try to put a nice thick layer in between them.
To hold the moisture, if nothing else.
Yeah, you don't have to water as much. And so I'll put it all around those plants and in between. And there again, it may not be putting it. This year it's a mulch, next year it's nutrition.
Next year it's a nutrition, yeah, that's right, yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. And what I find is that I oftentimes actually add that seaweed to my potatoes after they are growing, and I just put it on top. And I have read, and my experience shows, that as long as you have some greenery showing up through it, the potatoes will grow through it. You know,
they
are not bothered by being covered up.
They don't seem to mind.
So any other streamlining things or things that you're still doing your rock paths? That is a very labor intensive.
It is very labor intensive. I have a professional grade weed mat underneath my gravel paths, but needless to say, the leaves fall and become dirt. So now you got dirt in your path
on top.
And even with that, even when they were brand new, you know, you drop a grass seed in that path, it's going to sprout.
It's going to grow.
And you know, if you want a green grassy path, that's fine. Just let the grass grow and mow it and whatever. But I've tried to keep my gravel, and so yes, it requires.
And it's still there. I mean, after 30 years, and you put that garden in because you work at it.
I pull out or pay someone to pull out every tiny piece of greenery.
And that's why it's
still
gravel.
Whether it's moss or grass or chickweed or whatever in those gravel paths. Yeah. I almost weed those more than the other beds. And part of my thinking is if you let it all go to seed in the gravel, it's just going to jump into your beds anyway.
It sure does, yeah.
That's right. So do you ever use like vinegar or any kind of anything to kill the weeds?
You know, I've thought about buying that industrial grade vinegar. I looked into it one time, and you know, certainly we could probably order it at Haynes Home or something, but I have not really done that. I probably should.
You know what's quite satisfying is to go around with a torch.
And I tried a little hand torch one time, and it didn't seem very effective to me, but then I had a lot of weeds, and this is one little tiny torch. Maybe if you have one of those great big ones.
There is a recipe that I have not tried, but it's on my list. I will do next year. There's only certain places you can use this, and gravel paths are a great place because using vinegar and putting Epsom salts in it supposedly enhances it.
And a little soap.
A little soap because that makes it stick to the plant. But garden paths are one place where you can use that. You can't put that in a garden bed because it's going to destroy the pH for the stuff you want to grow.
And as far as the torch, I mean, I have a couple inches of gravel, but then I have this plastic mat underneath it. I mean, if I would burn up the plastic, then the grasses are all just going to come through that.
Yeah.
You know, or the brambles are going to come through that. The grasses and the small seeds, they all sprout on top of the weed mat. But all the vining stuff and the brambles, the weed mat does kind of keep those out of the middle of the path. You know, they'll come up at the edge of the path,
right,
but they won't
yeah.
come up in the mm-hmm. middle because of that cloth.
And what we're talking about is one of the things that I have certainly learned through my gardening here is that you can spend more time on taking care of what's around your beds than what is in your beds. In fact, I would guess that many of us do that. And so my solution to that, because I said I'm just not going to do that, is I use old lumber tarps that I get from the local lumber yards, and I put that down between my beds. And yes, it doesn't look as beautiful, but I try to use only black ones. My husband likes to put down the light colored ones, and I don't like those. So I try to use only the black ones, and I staple them down so that the wind doesn't pull them up. And they last probably about 5 years mm-hmm. before they start to shred. So it's a choice you have to make, because you can spend so much time keeping your garden area free of weeds. And if you don't do that, like you said, they just go into your
right.
beds.
And then the same thing could be said of the slugs. So was this year amazing, because there was no slugs.
I know.
I think I killed two slugs this year.
I know.
Last year, I must have killed thousands. Mm-hmm. I would go out for hours at a time with my knife or my scissors.
And is that how you do slug control? You take a scissors or whatever?
Yes. And Sharon Svensson told me about the Sluggo stuff that mm-hmm. they sell.
Yep.
And that stuff does really seem to work. I did mm-hmm. the beer thing for a little while, but it was kind of a bit of trouble to make the little beer, mm-hmm. you know, to fill those little beer houses. But I have on the edges of several of my beds, I just have a plank, a board.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, in any warm day, the slugs would all congregate under there. I turn the board over and kill
There's
20 of them right
of
there.
Them. Yeah.
Or hundreds.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah, that's right.
And, you know, when you start seeing somebody biting in your cabbage, you come out and start peeling those leaves back a little bit to mm-hmm. find the slugs. But, mm-hmm. yeah, it's mostly hand-picking them is mm-hmm. I'm glad I did the previous year. I'm glad I spent so much time doing it, because then this year
that's the thing.
Really were hardly any.
Somebody said that they thought that there was more winter kill last year of slugs, because we did not have the snow to cover and whatnot. My experience has shown that the Sluggo, which is an organic approved pesticide, you can use it. It doesn't harm any animals or anything like that. It works very well if you are consistent with it, because what it does is, for me, it's knocked down the amount of slugs that are laying eggs, because if you just let them go, they're laying all.
Right.
And a lot of people don't know that slug eggs are those little pearl-shaped.
Yeah, those little white pearly
pearly-looking things, mm-hmm. and you see them in clumps. Those are slug eggs.
I'm not even sure that I know what the slug eggs
are. Well, that's what
they
are.
But I know that in some seasons, really bad slug seasons, there's not just your great big slugs, it is little tiny ones, the babies. I mean, and they're harder to kill just because they're, you know, they're so little.
And I hear there's some new ones that are coming to town.
Well, I have suddenly, the orange ones weren't, you know, a few years back there was no orange slugs mm-hmm. in my garden.
Mm-hmm.
The gray
and
ones.
They have
and
not
now
reached.
There's kind of some black ones. And so.
None of the other ones have reached out the road yet, and I'm just happy in keeping them here in town. So, So I also wanted to talk a little bit about what have you done for preservation. For years, you lived without any electricity, so you probably didn't just throw things in your freezer. So.
No, I didn't. We didn't mm-hmm. have a freezer. We didn't have a fridge for a long time, But and then we got one of those energy-efficient fridges, and now, a few years ago, we got a small freezer, but now that we're on the grid. But I mostly did canning mm-hmm. in those days, because besides being off, because of being off the grid, I've had a dehydrator since, for 45 years or something, and I used to use it so much in California, I would make eggplant parmesan and dry it to take it backpacking,
mm-hmm.
you know, that kind of thing. So I was drying everything. I lived in California. I had access to the Central Valley with all those fruits and vegetables, and I did a lot of drying. But then the electricity issue was, anyway, I didn't do much drying here in the beginning, but now I am drying a lot of foods again. We have 60
You've got fruits.
Fruit trees.
And fruits really lend themselves to good drying.
And fruits lend themselves. So I just this fall dried 9 gallons of apples as tightly as I could pack them in the jars.
Goodness.
It's my dream.
I dry parsley. Last year I dried all kind of vegetables to make some soup mixes for Rob to take backpacking. But what else do I dry? So I dry. I do canning. Mm-hmm. put some stuff in the freezer, you know, some of the berries, like raspberries, I'll put in little those little snack bags in the freezer so you have just the right amount for a smoothie. That said, I will also can raspberries and blueberries, put them in 8-ounce jars with apple juice over them, and just can them, and then that's just the right amount for a smoothie. I used to make salmon chowder with our vegetable gardens, and the way we did that is we would cut the chunks of salmon, put about a third of the jar with chunks of salmon, and then I would bring a pot of water to boil. I'd throw all my vegetables in, parboil them for just a minute or two, and then put that in on top of the raw salmon that was already in the jar, and just process it the way you do a jar of salmon, 90 minutes, 10 pounds.
And when I found that when we were eating fish, that the fish and the vegetables, the extra vegetables, oftentimes were at the same time. And so it was a great way of preserving those vegetables, and it was wonderful opening up a can of...
That's already,
done. Yeah. You know, just open it up, put it on the stove, and it's done.
And
so,
I don't do salmon chowder so much now, but I do like some... I have a lot of celery, so I make black bean soup.
Right.
But it's nice to have stuff
it is.
That's
it's
just
nice
ready.
To have it handy. Thank you very much, Donna. We're out of time. And before we end this, I want to just put the word out. For those of you who are conference goers, we are not going to have a garden conference in Haines this year, possibly next year. We'll see what happens with that. But the Farmers Summit is going to be happening this year. It's in Sitka. Sitka's a hard place to get to from here, I'm finding, but it is possible. And it's going to be February 16th and 17th. So I just want to put the word out if you're interested. There's going to be some really good stuff there. And you can go online and look at some of it. Mushrooms, bunch of good stuff.
What's it called?
It's the Farmer Summit. And and the Farmer Summit is really geared more towards commercial.
Right.
But there's so much information that gets exchanged that I'm sure it's going to be well worth your time of going. But it's a bit to get to Sitka.
It is a bit.
So thanks so much, Donna,
for
coming.
Thank you so much. The Garden Conversation with Mardell and Donna. Thank you. Have a great day.